Welcome. This is the Scale of One to Tech podcast. I'm Alex Mariner, founder and recruitment director at Acquire Digital Talent. I hope you guys have really enjoyed the first three episodes, and I've been really, really pleased with the positive feedback that I've received so far. Today, I was delighted to be joined by Michal Garg, who has worked across the UK and Europe with companies such as Photobox, TouchNote, and 8Fit. In his spare time, he loves to read, but for the last 3 years, he's been working as an on-demand CMO. Exactly. I don't know what an on-demand CMO is either. So join us on the other side to learn all about it. Michal, welcome. Thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So kick us off. Give us a brief overview of your career to date.
Sure. Alex, I think somebody would call me, or I call myself, I'm somebody who's been around the block a few times. I'm 37, proudly 37, been in my industry for more than a decade. Mm-hmm. And if I were to really, in a simple way, put my career, I would say I've had three lives. Like a cat has seven lives, I think I've had so far three lives in my career. One was a corporate career. Yep. Where I worked with the likes of Nationwide Building Society, GE Money, Daily Mirror, Michelin Tires, you know, so the big, big, big global conglomerates, corporates. Then I had my startup career where I worked with the likes of Photobox, TouchNote, Lovecraft, eHarmony. Right now I'm working with AirUp, Canon, their digital tech, lots and lots of scale-up, startup and scale-up businesses.
Yep.
And then last 3 years, I've done my own thing on-demand CMO, which is basically working with on a project basis with lots and lots of 15-plus different companies within the startup scale-up phase. So that's what I would say, you know, that's why I say I've had three lives. And obviously, this has taken me everywhere from UK, US, pretty much everywhere in Europe, especially Germany, mm-hmm. and English speaking countries, whether, you know, it's New Zealand, Australia, Canada. My career has made me travel quite a lot, which that's something I've really enjoyed.
Good to hear. Well, a very interesting career today, and only 10 years in, got load of gas in the tank to go. Tell me though, something I was interested to ask you there. You saying about doing some stuff in Germany back in the day when I focused a bit more on sort of search and performance marketing. Had candidates always used to say that they felt that Germany was a bit more ahead in terms of performance marketing. Would you say that's true, or is there any difference between, say, the UK and Germany in that respect?
From my experience, it depends. I wouldn't say ahead. I would just mm-hmm. definitely say what in my... So I've been involved in German market very actively since 2018, November, with 8Fit and right now, you know, with AirUp and, you know, some other companies that have launched in Germany. They are definitely more single inclined, so very much performance driven. Certainly in the Berlin scene and Munich scene, it's a very still close-knit community. I would say if you look at macro picture, you know, East European counterpart is still a couple of years behind their UK counterpart. And by that, I mean learnings, D2C learnings that you are seeing in UK, mm-hmm. They are still a bit behind. You know, even investors are a little bit more, I would say, a bit more naive in terms of, you know, there are more funding available for D2C businesses in Europe as compared mm-hmm. to UK. And therefore, and if you put performance marketing in that context, so because the community is so close-knit, a few companies like 8Fit, you know, they have done quite well in terms of performance marketing. And that playbook has been shared across businesses, Rocket Internet Group. So they share very similar playbooks. So it is very common to see performance marketing as a bedrock for growth, as the maybe the single lever in terms of growth. And within that, because they've been spending tens and millions of euros a year, a big spend, you know, even mm-hmm. for Series B companies, you definitely see a bit more advancement in that. But I wouldn't say that, you know, they are doing anything fundamentally different. It's just maybe the scale is a little bit different because they're a bit more focused.
Okay. Now that makes sense. Obviously, you said as well at the beginning, you've done some stuff with corporates and you've worked with some great tech start scale ups? Do you have a preference? What's more exciting to work with?
You know, to be honest, it's more about the exciting challenges. There are ups and downs. I'll be lying if I say one is better than the other. For personal reasons, I had the best blast in Daily Mirror just because, you know, there were more divas like me and prima donnas. You know, it was just great fun. Although now it won't be. I'm going back in 2010, 2011, when it was still good fun to work with the newspapers. For me, it's about those challenges, you know, and it's a different problems and the different mindsets that you're solving. And it actually goes from, I'm quite a macro guy. So if you look at macro to macro, and, you know, you had all the startups, they were first driven by search. You know, you had all these startups, even like PhotoBox, for example, or Expedia and all the, you know, they were very search driven business because that was the new channel then. Then it came, you know, the likes of the 8Feet of the world and eHarmony of the world. Then, you know, you have these paid social businesses. So you had the raft of new businesses coming from paid social. Now you have influencer businesses. So it is interesting to see when you have been in the game for at least as long as I have, you just see that, you know, every time a new platform emerges, and this time it's influencer and TikTok and Twitch that everybody's talking about, a new breed of startup emerges, a new breed of startups emerges. But over a period of time, those challenges become similar, you know, in terms of driving growth, driving sustainability, driving profitability, unlocking next stage of growth. So yeah, I would say there is no particular, you know, in and out. It's just about culture, people, and the growth challenges that they are doing.
Which leads us nicely on to the topic that we're going to cover today. The rise of the T-shaped marketeer.
Yes.
Come on, Michal. Tell us then, what's your definition of a T-shaped marketeer?
Interesting. So I started playing around with the term, and I also started banding around. People are looking for T-shaped marketeer. And I was also kind of perplexed, you know. Again, you have to look at macro picture when it comes to marketing, you know, before we were acquisition, then became growth marketing, brand marketing, and now T-shaped marketeer. So my understanding, Alex, on T-shaped marketing, first of all, I actually did a bit of a Google trend year over year just to look at the term T-shaped marketing. And actually year over year, between 2019 to 2020, there is an 85% increase in terms of people, you know, the term T-shaped marketing, especially about 49-50% increase in the first half of the year, 2019 and 2020. I think that is underpinning actually the change of the skill set that is required from the CMO. So I've written an article, which I'll be soon to publish, about the rise of the T-shaped marketeer. So I've distilled it down to very simple, as the word T suggests. Yep. They need to go deep. They need to go wide. By that, I mean, they need to bring 360 degree. So, you know, brand, strategy, growth, sustainability. Also think, if you're working in physical products, things about logistics, internationalization, you know. Mm-hmm. So they need to have that breadth of skills, but at the same time have very strong core marketing disciplines, performance marketing, retention, good exposure to brand marketing. How does digital product means? So they should be able to, you know, do big strategic thinking, but equally be able to drive campaign optimization, be hands-on, even if that means writing campaign briefs, be able to do that. So that's the, you know, that's the thing, you know, be strong at least in one or two core areas of marketing, really strong expert, with an overall context and understanding of 360.
When you say be really strong in a core area, in a few areas, could that be as niche as just PPC and paid social as an example? Or does it need to be still broader than that and incorporate all of performance marketing?
This may be a controversial thing. I personally, I'm a channel agnostic. And I think as marketeers, we got to be channel agnostic. Mm-hmm. Be it PPC, be it paid social, be it affiliates, be it influencer, be it TV. You know, if you simple it down, there are only three variables. You know, CPMs, you buy cheap, you convert more, your conversion rate has to be, you know, and your click-through rate is higher. You just need to be able to apply. So I would say have strong. So you could originate from paid social or paid search or in these days, influencer or DRTV, which was in my case. Mm-hmm. But you should be able to apply yourself and not get, you know, understand the differences of each channel, but but still be able to take the, you know, apply yourself. So as a T-shaped marketeer, where I found the mindset where it changes is, you know, once you, if you're very much into PPC, or if you have not managed to branch yourself out of paid social and PPC, the optimization mindset takes over. So, and there's a difference between an optimization and efficiency mindset, which is absolutely important, versus a growth and a strategic mindset. Mm-hmm. So it comes down to the ability of, can you switch gears? Are you as comfortable with working with hypothesis as you are comfortable working with analysis?
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
The reason I ask, I think there's probably that there could be more junior individuals listening that maybe are even a PPC exec or SEO. They could be at manager level, but they could be very channel specific. And we're saying here,
yes,
there's going to be a rise of a T-shaped marketeer, but they're going to go, hang on a second, I'm only really involved in one channel. Am I going to be squeezed out here? How would someone like that go about that? If they were quite channel specific right now, what would be the steps they need to take to become T-shaped?
That's a great question, Alex, because, you know, my advice, and by all means, you know, I'm not somebody who's challenging the high stakes. So, mm-hmm. you know, give it or take it. But my advice would be broaden yourself. You know, if you are, if you're listening to, you know, to your podcast, which, you know, I'm sure a lot of digital marketers will be listening, and if they're channel owners, mm-hmm. don't pigeonhole yourself. Look around you. There's lots and lots of opportunities to learn with your colleagues. For example, how creative optimization is doing. So not only focusing on, maybe creative is produced by the agency or by another internal team, but own that process of, okay, you know, we are testing the creatives, how the value propositions are working, you know, just not focusing on the what or the, you know, the quantitative aspects of it, but also focusing on the qualitative aspect of it. Think about the consumers. Think about the customer segmentation. Think of, you know, so you have lots and lots of opportunity. Things about the competition. Think about the macro picture. So I would always advise do that, because where I see with AI, and for example, you know, Facebook is a classic example. I've been working with Facebook platform for a couple of years now. And, you know, in the beginning, Facebook algorithm was something that you could not trust. And there was a lot of manual stuff. You know, it's like you would want to do manual bidding, because if you relied on Facebook algorithm, it will basically fuck it up. So a lot of time it was, you know, all about manual bidding. So therefore you needed people to do that. Yeah. A lot of now the algorithm has become much better. In fact, if you do too much of manual stuff, you don't really get the scale. So where I believe with AI coming in and automation coming in, lot of monkey type analytical work is getting automated. So you have to be, yes, data driven, but you have to be creative. So my advice would be broaden yourself, still be at your core, but look, be aware and look what's going around you and how your particular channel is fitting in the overall mix. And don't wait for somebody to give you that responsibility.
Which I think is a great point as well, right? Because there's so much talk out there over the last few years about automation will take our jobs. So,
yes.
So perhaps becoming more of a T-shaped marketeer is a great way to future-proof yourself.
Yeah, because with automation, you know, obviously, as us marketeers, we will be squeezed even more, because a lot of our jobs that we were used to do, you know, like, for example, building dashboards, creating Excel reports. Now, I don't remember when was the last time I did, but therefore, that means I need to do a lot more creative work. And creative work doesn't mean, you know, do drawing, but in terms of insights, in terms of understanding, okay, the consumer insights, the why. So that would be my, you know, always link your area to the how it works in the broader picture, and how you, the what is the role you are playing and your channel is playing in the overall funnel.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we've made some of those channel experts listening a little bit more comfortable now. Why do you think, Michal, a T-shaped marketeer is so important in today's market?
Good question. Just, you know, just for your viewers also who are listening, just, you know, it's not doom and gloom. Just because they are important doesn't mean that others are not important, you know.
Sure.
So let me just make that clear. I think why they are certainly became, so I'll give you my example, Touchwood, and I'm not coming across as an asshole here, but I have serious empathy for the viewers because it's a tough time out there right now. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people are out of jobs and, you know, it's tough economically, even for business. Alex, for me, Touchwood, it's been the best year ever. I've had to literally turn, as an on-demand person, I literally had to turn away business because I'm running over capacity. I've not been able to take a single day off since April. It's been really, really busy. And I think that the reason I'm sharing that story is not to piss people off, mm-hmm. but actually, you know, I think my T-shape has had a lot to deal with it. So the reason why I feel that the T-shape market are getting more and more important or essential for companies is because, you know, there are factors. There's digital duopoly, right? So your acquisition costs are becoming expensive. Mm-hmm. There is a huge competition. You know, every sector you see, there are plenty of solutions pouring out of ideas out there. So you need to be able to find your value proposition. You need to be able to, and everybody's going for the same audience, you know, 18 to 24 millennials. And, you know, everybody seems to be going for the same audience. So I think marketeers are getting more and more pushed to come up with creative solutions, mm-hmm. but, you know, because there's very little product differentiation these days, unless, you know, there are innovations, which are very far and few in between, to be honest. Let's just be honest about that. But it's just, how do you tell your story? How do you put your narrative through? What is your value proposition? How do you make it relevant to your audiences? And then obviously all the rest of the things, like then how do you implement it very effectively? Mm-hmm. So because we have to think much more broader these days and not just specific, therefore there is the rise of this T-shaped marketeer, in my view.
And look, I want to come back to the year that you've had. Look, I think personally speaking, there's enough doom and gloom on the news every day. And I think some positivity is great to hear. And I think in a tough year, people will want to hear about that positivity, right? If someone like yourself has done really well, I want to find out how he's done that, and we want to try and replicate that. So tell me, if I'm a senior marketing leader out there right now, and perhaps mm-hmm. I've got the way my team's set up is more in line with these channel experts, but I'm agreeing, and perhaps I see your way of the T-shaped marketeer being the right way to go in the future. How's a senior marketing leader going to make that switch? What's sort of the process?
So, I mean, I don't have like a perfect roadmap for mm-hmm. it. So I can share what worked for me, to be honest. And obviously, everyone has their own journey and they have to take their own journey. First and foremost, you know, I think you've got to be comfortable. There has to be that desire, the fire from within. I'm going back now. I think it is, I'm going to be showing my age. I'm going back in 2004 or 2005 when I read the book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And I still very vividly, very clearly remember the circle of influence concept, that you need to keep increasing your circle of influence, or circle of confidence, actually, and I think that has stayed with me. So the first and foremost is that mindset that, you may be doing PPC, or you like me, I was doing TV. I came from a DRTV. I came from selling offline media from Daily Mail directly to Photobox, driving, digital. For me, it was like, I know what I'm good at, I can apply, but I need to continue to expand my circle of knowledge. Hmm. And it is painful. You know, I've had to do 100 hours a week for several years. I don't do that anymore. Now and then I have to still pull in that. But for several years, I had to be committed to that. I need to broaden myself. So first and foremost, that desire has to be there. And then what has worked for me, again, it will be a little bit controversial for you. I have been an underdog all my life. Maybe not now, but I have managed to be at the wrong place at the wrong time, rather than being at the right place in the right time. So what I mean is maybe I've chosen companies that were going through crises, mm-hmm. or maybe I've been in the teams. So when you're going through crisis, you either do not have enough budget, enough resources, and you have to really dig deep in. It has been very, especially at Photobox and TouchNote, those 5 years were really difficult years for my life, but that's what shaped me because it forced me. I didn't have an expert on PPC. I didn't have an expert on creative. I didn't have an expert on, you know, on paid social or on CRM. I had to learn and develop and, you know, and just while also growing the company. So I would say one thing that has worked for me is don't get carried away by the big name, the X-Revolutes, the Monzos and the Gustos of the world. They obviously, you will get, those companies are big, so the roles become much smaller. You know, they are much more focused. And I've always gone for a smaller companies where there will be more challenges because there you get more responsibilities and exposure to be able to go, you know, expand your skill set. It comes at a cost of emotional sanity though, but that has worked for me.
What
being
roles,
at the wrong place at the wrong time.
And what roles were you doing, Micho, in the likes of Photobox and TouchNote?
So in Photobox, when I started, the company was going through, it was a search business, grown successfully through search business. They had acquired Moonpig by then, and Moonpig was grown on TV.
Right.
And Photobox tried to crack TV, but couldn't work because they were applying the digital PPC mindset. The same people who were doing PPC were trying to crack TV, and obviously it wouldn't work. So my role when I first started, it was just simply head of above the line, where making direct response TV work to drive acquisition. Mm-hmm. Within a year, I broadened my role to the head of international marketing, where I was talking about brand. And because TV was driving traffic, I myself got involved in, okay, how does that convert into PPC? How does that convert into CRM? How does that convert into affiliates? So really responsible for that. So I expanded my role, to be honest. I could have sat there and be the DRTV person, but I wanted to go beyond. So then I evolved into head of international marketing. And then I moved to TouchNote. I got a call from them, the guys. Again, it was, you know, Photobox then was a 400 million turnover business. Mm-hmm. And TouchNote was even, you know, it was even barely 5 million then. So you can, you know, from a company of 600 to a company of 15 people. Very, very big difference. At Photobox, we had a big building with a security entrance. At TouchNote, I was the first one to open the locks and get into the office and let people in. That's the difference you're talking about. But there, my role started as a marketing director and then CMO because I was responsible for anything and everything. Started with a team of, I think, two or three people. And when I left, it was about a team of seven. Still small, but the company grew from team of 15 to team of 50. So, you know, that's the difference we are talking about here between the two.
Sure. I want to touch upon, because I'm sure throughout your career, there's been a whole host of technology that you've used to help these campaigns be really successful.
Yeah.
What would you say, what technology have you used those whilst working for these sort of tech-driven companies? So let's look at the startup scale-ups and even maybe during the on-demand CMO stuff that you've been doing. What's helped you to achieve fantastic results that the listeners out there should be going, hang on a second, we need to investigate this technology.
So I may disappoint you and your listeners, Alex, on this response. So I apologize in advance. Listen, in terms of tech stack, so, you know, the way in our term with people, we call it, what's the tech stack? So you're right. You know, I worked from, you know, all different, you know, HubSpot, Marketo, Click, you know, from a BI point of view, Looker, Tableau, Sizen, or, you know, or in terms of optimization, you know, either Google Optimizely, Google A-B testing, all, I mean, there is plethora of tech, tech platforms, tech innovation, let's use the word innovation out there. I'm not the best person to give you the answer, and the listeners can easily, basically the simple thing is just Google it. What is the most common tech stack the companies are using, and you will get the answer. And I'm sure you have got more experts coming on your, you know, podcast to talk about it. Where I have, and it stays true to me, because we are in this age, I talk about mindset innovation, and that's what I have kind of mastered. And I've become an evangelist of doing this mindset innovation, especially how we think. And I've created a framework to drive that effective productivity in my team. So by that, I mean, I'm like, look, we are in the information age, right? As I said, you know, we are always on, always connected, digital. You know, it's the solutions are pouring out of these ears. But, out of our years. But the irony is, in this digital day, we couldn't be far from discontented disconnection. So what I mean by that is, you know, we are looking for solutions, you know, how to optimize it. Okay, we have a certain problem in the figures or in performance. How do we optimize it? There's a tracking issue. We are very jumping on the solution without actually really checking in. Is it the right problem that we are solving in? Mm-hmm. And most of that, again, I'm a fan of Albert Einstein when he said that if I had an hour, I would spend, you know, 45 minutes in, or maybe 50 minutes in defining the problem, and then, you know, 5 minutes or 10 minutes in coming up with a solution. And to be honest, that's been very true for my consultancy also, that in this, you know, in this always on connected world, I talk about the mindset innovation and how do we take stop and at least think before we, you know, think for a moment, you know, think for an hour, just, you know, encourage our people to think. And the way I do it in my team is I've created this framework. It's called BIP, B-I-P. So B stands for BAU, or business as usual. I stands for innovation, and P stands for projects. Because again, you know, there's all these tech platforms out there, and people in digital world, it's all about doing. So what I do with my team, or wherever I'm setting up the team, is I create this framework, and I get my heads off at least to put their hours, that out of a month, how many hours they're spending in BAU task, how many hours they're spending in project, and how many hours they're really doing in innovation. And the way I operationalize innovation is I make sure that they take a one day paid off in a month to not only do, but just think. So they are allowed to take a day off. It could be a Friday, whatever they are, but their job is just to think, how can they drive innovation within their areas? Now, that could be performance marketing, that could be brand, that could be retention, that could be due to tech innovation, that could be a process, anything. Yep. But the whole point, the fundamental idea behind this framework is giving them, you know, reminding them that actually it is good to think without doing, you know, just let's not focus on you have got all the other days, 24 days, however working days are there to do, but that just one day, just think. And I've been able to, you know, it's difficult sell, especially when you're working the client side, is a difficult sell to do it.
Yep.
And I've managed to do it three times. And I tell you, with three companies, and the results have been quite spectacular, where, you know, you see the development of the team, you know, even in terms of now we are talking about tech stack, because that of that one day that people have had the time to think, you know, take away. So they have managed to think, okay, you know what, we are able to automate that part of our job. And in order to drive the automation, we can maybe look at the multi-touch attribution. So another example was, you know, out of this, a concrete example was, we were thinking about building a multi-touch attribution system. And I know, and I, even your users, this is a holy grail of marketing that nobody has cracked. But just out of this, actually, my head of performance came up with an idea that, listen, why do we have to build a multi-touch attribution system internally when there's plug-and-play solutions like Foshpa out there who make it very easy to do it? They may not be 100% correct, but they are 90% correct. And if we do that, I can actually reduce 30% of my time during the month doing that, and we will become better at planning. So again, I've not answered your question directly, what tech, to be honest, because that is widely available. But yep. Where I look to drive innovation in that mindset and giving the luxury to think.
To be fair, I think that's a better answer than innovation, to be fair, because there's no one else that's going to talk to us about BIP. Where did that come from? Is it, obviously, was it your own, or was it taken, adapted, or?
So, you know, as I've been doing on demand for 3 years, from 2017, so I left TouchNote in 2017, April, and 2017 was a great year. From June, I had three clients, so I had great fun in 2017. 2019 onwards, also life has been good. 2018 was tough, Alex. Mm-hmm. 2018 was tough. It tested my resilience because I didn't want to just be a consultant and, you know, do interim marketing. So I invested a lot of time in reading and developing. Can I come up with a knowledge-based product? I'm a fan of frameworks because I believe frameworks is what drives scalability. Frameworks has their limitation, and you should treat for what they are. They're a good roadmaps, you know, good guiding frameworks, but they allow structured thinking. And because we are in this information age, you know, everybody loves structured thinking, but it's difficult to come up with structure. So during that 2018, when I did a lot of research, I read quite a lot, I came up with a few frameworks. And this is a part of that framework, this BIP framework that I came up with. I do not know if, and I also, there's a personal belief to it, you know, because I do believe in the power of thinking. Mm-hmm. I do believe in the power of pausing a bit in this overconnected world. So yeah, it just came out of nowhere.
Apart from the commercial results from using that framework, have you, curiosity, have you caught up with any of your old team members who still perhaps talk about it or still implement it today? Or
so it's interesting. I mean, Sam, as you may have guessed, I don't know, but you know, I am certainly not an easy person to work with. At least, you know, so the one of the most common feedback I get, especially from my direct reports, that you are the worst and the best manager that we have had. Because, you know, I'm passionate. I love developing myself, and therefore I love developing people also. So I'm very fortunate to say people who were campaign managers when I was a head of, and now when I'm a CMO and they were head of, they've all gone to do bigger things and better things. So that's really good. And they have remained true to that model that Mehul, we still implement. Again, it's a where if you have that influence, because it depends on what culture that you are in, but they have still managed to retain that you know what, we, you know, this BIP framework that we have got, we still take our day off, and where we can, we tell our subordinates also to do that. So I hope it will, nice. You know, it will become so-called viral, you know, because our people need that. In fact, to your listeners who will be listening to this podcast, I would say, you know, take this, talk to your managers. I'm sure your managers, and you talk to your senior people and say, can they implement this framework within there? And I'm sure, you know, if the answer is yes, you know, you're in the right company. If the answer is no, well, you know what you need to do then.
How good would that be, right? In a couple of years, I get a job spec through, and one of the requirements is for a senior leader who can implement the BIP method.
I'll take 50% of that, please.
Obviously, as you said, this year's been a great year for you and working with some really cool, funky tech startup scale-ups. Obviously, on the whole, it's been a difficult year. But for me, I have seen a lot of the tech startup scale-ups that I've personally worked with. They've weathered the storm pretty well in comparison to the wider market, which is great to see. But what are you specifically telling your clients to perhaps focus on in 2021 to stay ahead or get ahead? Are there any aspects of perhaps marketing or growth or maybe even different mindsets to take next year?
Good question. First of all, I think, so, you know, AirUp is a great example, which is a Munich-based Asian company that I'm working for. It's food tech, massive growth, you know, since April, built a team of about 25 people in marketing. And so it's huge growth. And I think, you know, with the onset of coronavirus, we have had very extremes. E-commerce, either they have done really well and have the logistical issue of not fulfilling the demand, or certain businesses which were not aligned properly to, you know, to encash from this unfortunate crisis, they have seen decline, you know, and there's a plethora of examples there. Because especially, so I'm going to use examples at least for the businesses that have seen the growth, you know, because they are recruiting quite fast and it's all very remote working. Culture is so important to be able to get that across. People are feeling disconnected. They're mostly working from home. They are joining companies without, you know, being, if you don't get that vibe or what's the experience, you know, or what's the culture. It's so difficult to replicate that when you're remote working. So one thing I'm investing in advising, as well as, you know, actually AirUp is a great example where they're really investing in people and culture, where there is, it's not called HR, but it's called people and culture. Mm-hmm. And there are individuals from people and culture who are working with the likes of VPs and CMOs. So they're dedicated people whose job is just to drive that people and culture. So that's one thing that will continue, because remote working is here to stay, a hybrid model. So therefore, that's one thing I'm advising the companies in terms of the people and culture. Second thing is, I think the shared values, and this is certainly, and again, I'm going to put my age out there, the mid-20s, the millennials, if you want to call them like that, they're entering into the workforce, you know, they are looking for that connectivity, the sense of belongingness, the shared value. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what is, yes, growth, profitability, all those things are there. But an amount of times when I ask people, why do you want to join AirUp, or why do you want to, you know, come and work for my other clients, they say, actually, we like what you stand for, the sustainability aspect of it. We like what you are trying to, you know, the problem that you're trying to solve, you know. So I think it is, there has to be some kind of conscious, the shared value. That's also, I'm, you know, at least working with clients and telling them you need to find that. And it can't be just good lip service. You know, gone those days where free food, you know, free Monday lunches or a pool table were the selling points. They are no longer those selling points. So what are those CSR? So that's one thing. And specifically in terms of marketing, I think if I were to give you the tangible, something more tangible there, I mean, channels, for example, influencer marketing, that's a new channel, newest channel that's really working well. And it is actually, you're balancing. It is about balancing. So not really relying on just paid social, paid search or affiliates, but really, you know, spreading your risk across all different channels. And because of that, the main thing is your brand, your value proposition, because now you see a lot of startups, especially if they are Series B, they've realized that they've hit their scale when it comes to performance marketing, you know, optimization. So the brand aspect, the using brand as a lever, we will going to see more and more of that coming in the next couple of years.
Brilliant. And I really buy into what you said, certainly about... long are the days, space hoppers to office meetings and God knows what Google used to have. But there are so many more businesses nowadays. Well, I say businesses, candidates as well, that certainly tell me I'm looking to work for a company with a mission, with a vision and a purpose to do good. And I think more within the tech startup and scale up space, they do have a vision to do good for the world or for humans or for our way of life, opposed to we're just a business to make money. So
And I think with Corona, if anything, coronavirus has taught us is that you know, actually you don't, it's kind of a given that check in consumerism. Obviously, you know, people say something and then something like Debenhams happens and you have got a million people in the queue on the website waiting to really, you know, behave like vultures. I mean, this is funny, you know, when people talk about anti-China, people talk about child labor. And again, I'm being controversial here, but immediately when the deals come, Black Friday, you know, when the deals come, all the consciousness and value goes out of the window and, you know, just consumerism takes place. But we are seeing more and more of responsible consumerism coming. Mm.
Yeah. I have seen on LinkedIn, to be fair, I have seen it's only a couple, probably a handful of companies, but going against Black Friday this year and talking along those lines, which is interesting, and it's good to see.
Well, actually, speaking of Black Friday, you know, there's a rise in called Green Friday, where companies are opting out not to do discounts, and maybe then they are tying up with charities to say, okay, if you buy from us during this time, this is where we will give it to charity. And I certainly think as UK, at least UK and Europe, we are leading that chart. US, it's obviously still Black Friday. But I think I'm so proud of our companies in the UK and the Europe that at least certain challenges are leading that charge and they are talking about responsible consumerism.
I want to finish off today, Michal, with one final question. I'm really looking forward to the response here. What advice would you give younger Michal starting out in the world of marketing with all this great knowledge and experience that you've gained over the years? What knowledge would you impart to him?
I would say be bold and trust in your instincts. You know, that's certainly the advice I would give my younger self. It has taken me 10 years to realize that, but you know, just be bold and trust your instincts. So if that means going against the grain, so be it. Yes, you will fail, but you will learn, you know. So yeah, just don't be afraid. You know, again, I will say I've remained underdog for most of my life. Last 3 years, you know, life has been kind to me. So there is a value in being underdog, being at the wrong place at the wrong time, because it really helps you to become more resilient and to dig deeper within yourself. So yeah.
Right, everyone loves an underdog. And look, I wish you all the very best and success for 2021. But Michal, been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Alex. Pleasure is mine. And I hope your viewers get even one thing out of this podcast.
Thanks for listening to this episode. And remember, if you've enjoyed what you've heard, then please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. We'll see you next time.